That nigga Daz, you know how we do it, nigga. We gon' keep it hood, nigga. What's up?
So West Coast, I'm West, I roll it on the West side. When niggas West Seattle had to rise to the left side. Sacking down Crenshaw, trying to let the lead fly. A lot of niggas brain dead, guilty of the egg fry. West Coast swagger, county jail magnet. Roaches in the ashtray, roaches in the cabinet. IG got these bitches thinking about their badness. Lace fronts everywhere, extra on the ratchet. Yeah, I'm from the West Coast, land of the best smoke. Moon rock everywhere, feeling like a chest broke. Hot hoes, Roscoe, homies in the barrio. 32 prison for the coins like Mario. Live bitches, sorry ho. Live niggas, sorry ho. Real niggas turn state, sorry we don't harbor those. Had a few squabbles on the main line.
How's everybody doing today? My name is Aaron Showtime Taylor. Welcome to Hard in the Paint. The song you just heard features my man right here, Tylo Tiny Amp. Now, to set this up, you have to understand who this young man is and what our connection is. Many times I've said on this show and said that all my close friendships started in prison over the past 26 years. During the time I was at Centinella State Prison on a level 3 yard, B facility, there was a lot of youngsters on the yard. Average age was right around 25 or 26, and there was a few of us older heads in our early 40s to early 50s. And because that yard was structured the way it was structured, CDCR at one point shut down what's called prison industrial authorities, shut down the PIA, which meant that it was close to 1,500 people on a yard that was designed to only hold right around 600 during recreation time. And so with the mixes of races and how everything was set up, it seemed that, and I want to call this what it is, right? It seemed like the mischaracterization of a disease followed people from the inner city to a prison yard, to the point where the arrested development was, we saw each other as enemies at the point till we was taking each other out. And so it was at that point some of the older heads got together and we started a softball league. That softball league consisted of myself and a couple of other older heads getting with a lot of the youngsters on the yard and convincing them to create softball teams so they can compete. We put money in a pot together, and the winner at the end of the season got the money. That turned into a basketball season as well, into what became known as the CBL. The young man that's sitting here with me helped form both of those leagues, was the foundation of one of the teams, the Blue Sox, was during the softball league, and was also the winner of one of the first rap contests I put together inside of prison. This is my young homie right here. This is love.
All day.
All day long.
All day long.
All day long, man.
I'm honored to be here.
Okay, so we saw the video, right, though, for those that are going to see it in post-production. But, okay, we know you're making music now. And in the video, we saw Zeus was in there. We know he passed. So when was that video made?
I think 2018.
2018, okay.
Maybe 2000, between 2018 20. Don't mark me on it. I mean, don't quote me on it. I don't remember. But
I got you.
It was a lot of time.
And so between the time we see this video, because obviously we got Daz and Corrupt in there, between that time and now, what have you been doing with your musical career?
Well, just dropping singles. I've been on tour. I opened up for the Dog Pound. I opened up for Corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
I've just been flying back and forth to Atlanta, doing my entrepreneur thing, selling T-shirts, you know, the Crenshaw by Nature label, right, or my brand or whatnot. I did numerous videos as far as, you know, it's the Crenshaw by Nature. That's mainly what I've been focusing on,
mm-hmm,
besides, you know, the music career, because things run hand in hand. It's like Nip and Sam had told me when I came home that, bro, you have to get you something tangible. And so then what they meant by that was that you have to get something that people are going to remember you by,
mm-hmm,
besides the music. And so I took that game and I ran with it. And that's when I came up with me and the big homie came up with the Crenshaw by Nature. And then so, because, you know, people can listen to your music all day, but when they stop, they still got something to remember you by.
Right.
When you go into your closet or whatever, you're going to remember either me or the experience with me or something that has to do with us. And that's what running your marathon really means.
Right, right. I got you. You're talking legacy right now. right? You're not just talking about making music, but you're talking about establishing a legacy. And that's what the brother Nip did. Right. You know, while us older heads were in prison, you know, we could see what was going on. And he started something and showed people in that age group. So like when you come home, you already was a fit for it. And we're going to get to how I know you were a fit for it in a minute. We're going to go back to Centinella. But right. the pattern that you laid out, the pattern that you got from Nip and Sam, right, is basically, you use the word tangible, I'll say this, get an asset, right?
Right.
Something that's not going to lose value, right, but can help you gain money. Is that what you're talking about when you say tangible?
When I say, yes and no and yes, because when I say tangible, is you're going to remember me. It's
more of an impression. You want to leave them something deep that they remember from an emotional standpoint.
Right. From an emotional standpoint, from a physical standpoint, mm-hmm. from you're proud to wear this. Mm-hmm. The experience that you had with me, because a lot of people that bought t-shirts was a hand-in-hand on experience. Mm-hmm. You know, they was coming over there to pay tribute to Nip, and they wanted to take a piece of our area with them. And so I would explain to people what Crenshaw by Nature was, who I am, where I started. You know, they would ask a lot of questions about Nip, how me and Nip was affiliated, and, you know, things of that nature. So when I say tangible, it some physical, because you can download my song all day, mm-hmm. and it's not a personal experience. That's why, you know, you see a lot of rappers coming out with vinyl now, because the personal mm-hmm. feel is gone. So therefore,
you want to make that connection.
You can wear that.
You can wear the t-shirt and remember the experience that you had when you got the t-shirt. I met Tylo. I was over on Crenshaw and Slauson. I was in the zone and I got this.
And it make you go back to the music, or maybe not, but it still gives me that it covers all the bases.
Right. So let's back up right now. We met at B Facility at Centinella back in 2007 or 2008.
Long time ago.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. That was a long time ago. So now, leading into that, had you already started a rap career before you came to prison, or did you get started in prison rapping by the time I met you?
No, I was already, remember I was signing to Snoop.
No, I don't remember. You're giving an interview. Hold up, wait a minute. Let me look at my camera. See, we know each other. I'm not already know the answer to. I'm like a good lawyer when it comes to this type of stuff. Right? I ain't going to put him in a position to have him saying something he ain't supposed to say. You know what I'm saying? Right. So, yeah, I know the answer to the question, but he got to remember, we got some people either watching this or going to see it.
No, smack about me. I'm sitting up here talking about you know.
Yeah, I know, but TLM. Okay, so before you had a career and...
Before I met my brother, I was signed to Snoop as one of the nephews. From there, I was dealing with Ludacris and Disturbing the Peace. That's when Chingy was hot. Mm-hmm. I was going back and forth to Atlanta with Chingy. And, you know, I was just recording music. 2 Chainz with Titty Boy at that time, which is a real close friend of mine, too. Lil Fate. All these people that are affiliated with Ludacris, I went to, you know, Ludacris had took me to his house, and because our birthday, we both Virgos, so they had flew us out to Atlanta. So that, I'd already had a previous career. My song was on the radio, matter of fact, for 2 weeks before I was shot, and I didn't come home for 11 and a half years.
Now, whatever comfortability that you want to speak about that, you go ahead, and if you don't feel comfortable about it, you want to keep it on the low, then we can do that and move on. And I'm gonna leave that up to you.
No, about what the situation?
Yeah, what brought you to jail? If you don't want to talk about
My stupid self wanted to still be in the streets, mm-hmm. because God was blessing me with all the things that I wanted, you know, and because I had been through a lot of tragedy. I was signed to Eric Sermon once before, me and my cousin Tommy Gunn, mm-hmm. and Laurie Steen, rest in peace. I found him murdered in our house in 96 from some haters, a still open investigation. And so from there, I had to gather all the pieces. I ended up moving to Atlanta, going to Atlanta for a little while. I was performing with my boy Raz Kaz, my homeboy Mean Green, rest in peace. So, you know, I had to take the pieces and build them all back together.
Right.
So with me coming back to L.A., I came back to L.A., and, you know, just being caught up in the streets and being affiliated, being from a quote-unquote popular gang and really being from the block, it was a real stress. Not, I wouldn't say stress, but it was a pressure to where who was really from and who really wasn't.
Yeah, I was getting ready to call it an identity crisis.
Right.
You know,
right.
I was going to give it a nice little name. You know what I'm saying? People sometimes have an identity crisis, you know. So in the prison, we call it straddling the fence.
We call it claiming the fame. It's not straddling the fence, it's claiming the fame. It's claiming the fame. A lot of claimers, and I was caught up in that stigma of what was real and what was not. Unfortunately, you know, that was an immature way of thinking, but that's what was
brought
survival then. Mm-hmm. That was really what made your name on the streets. That's what has you, you know, that was your connection.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And the results of that, we end up meeting. So now when we meet, right, it starts off with the Blue Sox, which is one of the names of the softball team that you was on, right?
Right. No, not, it was before that.
Was it the rap contest?
No, the Blue Sox was first, though. The league was first.
Yeah.
But before then, I used to come to your class. We used to talk about religion.
You talking about the Saturday class, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let me fill the audience in on that. On Saturdays at Sentinella State Prison on B facility, some of the older guys, but the guys that were really in Christians and Muslims, mainly Muslims, but we had a couple of Christians and other guys from other faiths. We put together a class on Saturday called Knowledge of Self. And what we did was we opened up the door for individuals, young brothers, and anybody else that wanted to come. But because of the racial politics, it was mainly black people coming in there. And we gave everybody an opportunity to teach from their perspective, blackness, black history, finance, whatever it was, religion. You had an hour, sometimes an hour and a half, depending on who was teaching. But you always had to leave at least 15 minutes open at the back end of your presentation for questioning and answering. And we used to do a lot of work with young brothers on the yard through the sports and stuff. And so this is the class that he's talking about. So you can go ahead now.
And through that class, just to
go ahead.
Add to the specialness of that class, that it helped form a lot of my ideas as far as religion and what I was. It opened my mind to other religions and other ways of thinking besides being controlled by a slave mentality. So that I want to commend you for too, because you opened up my eyes in a lot of ways. You introduced me to a lot of other things and a lot of other ways of thinking, and you was able to back it up with the knowledge with the book. See, because let me tell y'all, when we went to class, it wasn't about just you getting up there popping it, and because you was going to get tested, you was going to get, your knowledge was going to be, you know, you had to really go and study, because we wanted to know where you got it from. You had to know the basis of it. Even if you wanted to get up there and call yourself holding class, I never held mine like I was supposed to, because you really had to be on point with what you believed in, because we really wanted to know. We really wanted to help each other and gain understanding. And not just debate. Our classroom wasn't for debate, even though it turned to that a lot of times.
It did. But that's how you get to the truth sometimes, though. Like, and like you said, what we did on the yard, I'll look in the camera and say it. And I'll say I did this. This one I'll take complete credit for. I had been in religious communities where people are so stringent in what they believe that they think everybody else has to believe the way that they believe. And if you don't, something's wrong with you. And what we were teaching at Sentinella State Prison on B facility was, we're going to let everybody teach what they have. Bring it to the forefront. And then we're going to hold you accountable to the religion that you say you practice. So if I said I was a Muslim, which I am, and I was definitely a Muslim there, then you can hold me accountable to the laws of Islam. I'm going to live by these laws. If I'm outside of these laws, you hold me accountable to Islam. If you're a Christian with us, we know the Bible. If you was a Crip, we know Crip rules. If you was a Blood, we know Blood rules. We know the rules that everybody lived by. So we held everybody accountable to the rules that they said that they, you know, was. And what happened is everybody had an opportunity to teach everybody what it was from their cultural perspective, from their religious perspective, knowledge perspective. And what it did, it turned everybody sharp on the yard. Obviously, he's one of the examples, and he just said it. I didn't know he was going to say it, but Yeah. Yeah, we turned a lot of young guys on that yard into young, wise guys. You know, people that was using their mind. That's why we had almost 3 years, almost three straight years without blacks and Asians going on lockdown. Because we were smart and we played sports. We learned how to get our aggression out in a positive way.
And doing stuff that, you know, we all was, we all like to do. You know, we found ways, we found ways out of no way. And that couldn't nobody take from us.
Mm-hmm.
That's what was so special about it. We found ways out of no way. We made things interesting. We made time pass without being mentally locked from where we was at.
One of the ways that happened was this here. He brought an artifact up in here. Where's it at? While I was at Centennial State Prison on B facility, when we started the softball leagues, I came up with the way to promote the league with the show. We didn't have any cameras or nothing like that. So what I used to do, I would cut pictures out of sports magazines and use them as front covers and then sometimes use them on the inside. But mainly what's here is the historical record of the sports league that we're talking about now, the softball league.
You know, when we come to class, we have to be on point, right?
You so, did
you know,
this.
I have to bring this up.
You
know,
did this.
An article about me in there too, you know.
Let's go to your article. I got to see
this. The shortstop, you know.
You know where it's at, so you go straight to it. I don't even know how to act right now. This man just brought some. This man brought an artifact out.
Excuse me. Yeah, what did you say? No title is what?
Okay. Yeah. Let's see what we said. All right. You just saw what he did. Well, as we predicted, the team that had the focus won game three. Congratulations to the Blue Sox for advancing to the second round, and congratulations to the other side for showing teams in this league how to win and lose with honor and dignity. The score may have been 14-3, but it was a very exciting game. The door opened with a spectacular defensive play by the Blue Sox. Nope, Ty Lowe is clearly the first round series MVP for the Blue Sox. We just saying. The old side came out.
You know, that was hard to get somebody to write something like that.
Because you had to be doing your work to get in the show. You just wasn't getting in the show just because you caught a ball you were supposed to catch, or you made a basket.
Or
you had to do something spectacular to get in this paper. And there are many days that I've been surrounded on the yard.
Upset with you, sir, for telling the truth.
Not just telling the truth. I mean, like telling the truth without abandonment. Because the show made everybody honest. And I swear to God, for you to have this, and I know that there was a lot of people who were sending this home. And they would tell me that this was the first time they actually had some good news written about themselves since they've been inside that they could share with their families.
What?
You know, and when I started understanding the impact of that, you know, I feel bad that I didn't hold on to these. But I feel good that you was able to bring it back and be like, here you go, G. Remember when you did this?
Why?
Man, this guy that's sitting in the studio audience has the first copy of the show that I did at San Quentin when we was able to use photos and stuff in there and come with a little better quality. But this,
you know, when you got on TV and stuff, y'all got real famous.
Did you hear this dude?
You know, y'all saw reality shows and, you know, all that. We was just on the yard with a big old bag for the vittles and goodies, splitting it up.
And you know what? Let's talk about that for a minute, because I broke all kind of rules in CDCR to do that. I straight up did. When they pulled me into the captain's office and the captain asked me what rules did I know what rules I was breaking, I was like, yeah, I know what rules I'm breaking, you know. And she made me bring her copies of the show so she could read over it before I put it out, right? Mm-hmm. That's how. And I say that because I tell people all the time, you don't have to wait to do the right thing. You don't need nobody to tell you to do the right thing. You just do the right thing. And if you break some rules along the way, Once you've established that the right thing is working, the people who say you broke a rule will help you make sure that you get the rule right.
Wow.
And that's what they did per Captain Ron Kunzel, the white chick,
mm-hmm.
who, and again, let me say this, staff there on B facility actually helped us get people out to play in those sports leagues.
Some of them. Yeah, because it was a lot of staff that was against it because it kept us active. It kept the yard. It kept the yard.
We was moving
at peace.
On the yard.
And what was so crazy is that since the other races couldn't,
they didn't know how to function.
They couldn't, no, they couldn't participate with us. They would just watch in awe, and they would always.
But I'm gonna get to
tell me, yeah, because they was always.
I'm gonna get to that though.
Man, I wish we could. Oh,
but wait, we go.
Oh yeah, but then you start the league for them.
Wait, we gonna get to that.
That's right, man.
We gonna get to that. Look at you, and man, giving up too much news before I can get it out.
I told you we was there. You in the eye.
So now, when I say we set the league up illegally, according to CDCR rules, there's no gambling, right?
Period.
And one inmate can't hold another inmate's property.
Right.
However, I had each team put together, in the case of the softball league, it was $50 a bag. And in the basketball league, it was $25 a bag. And we put all of that together, and I let all the teams know 80% of that bag is going to go to the winner at the end of the season. The other 20%, 15% of that is going to go to referees, statisticians, scorekeeper, the dude that's writing the paper in the show. Mm-hmm. And then I got 5% as the commissioner, and I had to put all of those stats together, take all the information at the end of the day, put it together. And the next morning when they woke up, these grown ass men,
man,
in there with 25 to life, 50 to life, some dudes with LWAP and made it to a level 3, the very next morning would run out of those buildings like big kids and run to that basketball pole and see where they was at on the stats. I set that up because I want you to answer this question. From the perspective of what's the word I want to use? How did that feel when you went over there? What was the emotion attached? If you can speak to it from yourself or from, you know, the yard perspective, to see your name and your stuff up on that pole, to see your name in the newspaper and be able to send it. What is that?
Well, it just gives me hope. It gave me a sense of accomplishment in a place where you're not supposed to succeed. Then it was fun. It was real fun. It was high schoolish, mm-hmm. because it had the feel of high school. You had something to lose. You wanted to not get in no trouble because you know that your teammates was counting on you at the end of the day. So it made your walk a little bit different,
mm-hmm.
in prison. It made you think a lot more than having a chip on your shoulder. Brought a lot of enemies together, dudes that wouldn't normally get along, end up being teammates. Cause you know, we can talk about about my basketball team, you know, that I put together.
See, what he's telling you is, we found ways to become champions amongst ourselves. The leagues was used for self-esteem purposes. And the show was used for self-esteem purposes too, but we wasn't using it to like lift everybody. If you did some bozo, you're going to read it in the show.
You was going to see that too.
That didn't mean that, you know, like I said, I've been surrounded many a day. I'm going to tell you about a play, right? I got to tell him about this play. This is the Gang Stars versus, was the Hub and Dub? In the championship, the Compton Car. And
the Hub and Dub.
The Hub and Dub. And there was a ball that went in the right field. And I was the right field ump. And my boy T was behind the plate. And the ball was foul. And it was probably foul about that much, right? And I called it foul. And the Gangsters end up winning the game. Don't you think for 1 minute that I didn't watch my back? But 90 days minimum. Then was my boys on the Hub and Dub car. I'm close to all of them. We all boys. But in that moment, I knew, do not get caught slipping right now, because they was not feeling that call. And it didn't get straight until they actually won the next season. They actually won just like they should have won the other one, and they didn't. But they actually won it on their merit, and all that stuff was over with. What we did, we helped guys learn how to be athletes and learn how to be men in a place where we was destined, and they wanted us to fight and argue and get into it all the time. Because when we start making those leagues, it was always a 3-on-3, 4-on-4, or a 5-on-5. Black on black.
Black on black.
Black on black. When we started those leagues, like you said, man, I'm depending on you not to do that. We got some money on the line over here we trying to get.
Right.
That's something else I pointed out to somebody.
And we were sideline betting too.
Hey, there it is. I was getting into it.
It was serious. Like,
we created an economy on that yard.
Right. Right.
There was the sideline bets.
Side bets. I ain't gonna lie.
There was the fantasy league. The CBL fantasy league was there. We had the Hispanics and the whites used to watch the games, even though they wasn't involved in it.
You had the league so successful that the warden brought in their own baseball team.
Yeah. And even in that game, I was able to get all the races to come together to take part in a game that involved people coming in from outside. It was a cold politic I did, but it worked and it came out to be successful. You know, and even in that, I still think about the people who actually gave a sacrifice for that to happen.
Right.
You know, there were some people that were in the middle of that politic that had to leave after that, you know, and I still hold that dude, especially in my heart, because I knew what he sacrificed, but he did it for good.
Right.
You know, because we were able to all be out there and be a part of that game and a part of that process together. What happened after that?
No, everybody got together and we feasted. Remember?
That was something hella unusual on a prison yard. Hella unusual. But it came about because
lockdowns for months.
Yeah.
Lockdown for months. Coming out, going right back on lockdown. Getting cracking, going right back on lockdown.
That went on for about 2 or 3 years. And then when the sports league started, what happened after that?
It was a peaceful ride. And with that, a lot of people start getting transferred because their points start going down.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even want to leave at that time, but I didn't have no choice.
Yeah, it was a lot of good stuff going on. So now let's back up again because we really just having a conversation and I'm loving it. Let's go back to the first rap contest. What was it? The throwdown at the free throw line? What was the name of that one? Because we had it at the center circle.
What?
I mean, at the free throw line. And each rapper had a 16 bars, three apiece. Right. And whoever was in the circle, the circle was the one that chose the winner. Right.
No, what happened was, no, it was Deuce was going head up. It was. Who did I go against first? It was three rounds.
Mm-hmm.
It was three rounds. Whoever came, it was one that you had in the pot. We pulled out the pot.
That's how we did it. Yeah. Pulled the names out the hat.
And then that's how the Deuce and then the rounds were set up. And if you made it to the next round. Y'all had about four judges. Y'all got off to the side. I think it was even a couple of Mexicans that was judges.
Yeah.
And got off to the side, and then y'all decided who made it to the next round and like that.
And then at the end, it was the crowd that picked the winner, right? Because I don't remember us picking the winner at the end. But however it is.
You knew I was winning that.
That's
you
crazy.
What you talking about?
But however it was, the point I'm making is, not only did you win that rap contest, but until the next rap contest, what did that feel like on the yard? Because there was a lot of good rappers on the yard.
Oh, yeah.
It was about 10 or 15 of them.
I was a head honcho then.
Look, you still going back to that? I'm just talking.
No, because, you know, so I mean, it was fun. It was fun. It felt like it gave me my spark back. It made me think about all the things that I needed to start accomplishing and trying to accomplish. That I wanted to let go before I came, because before I came, I felt that my whole career was down the toilet. You know, I'm faced with 41 to life for attempted murder on a police officer, and I end up getting 13 years. So, you know, with that time gap, with trying to rap and come back, you know, you don't have a lot of faith in it. And with that, it just gave me more and more, I wouldn't say courage. It just gave me more validation on you still got it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then, you know, you need those times of enlightenment, because, you know, it could be a very dark place at times.
Okay, well, let's go back. I'm glad you mentioned that, because we didn't talk about sports. We talked about some prison stories. But let's go back to the spiritual part you just opened up.
Mm-hmm.
In that knowledge of self class, right, you mentioned earlier how you had the ability to open up and see things from a different perspective or different perspectives, right?
Mm-hmm.
How has that influenced your walk going forward from that time into now, right? Where would a person who knew you before you went to jail see that change in you and your music from since that time we were together?
I'm more, um, focus driven.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see things more clearly, I would say. And I think that's just with maturing. A lot of key points to life start to unfold where your mom used to tell you, you just got to keep living and you'll understand. Mm-hmm. So with those things that I did learn, I was able to adjust out here right now. So I think that God was going to form me to be this person who I am regardless. So that was just one of the vessels and one of the tools that he used at that time to help form me to who I am, because I'm still being formed right now.
Right, right. It's a continuing evolutionary process. And so in that, and I understand the question I'm about to ask is maybe a little difficult, but I just want you to keep it just like up high. Where are you at spiritually in the person you are now?
I know we've been bamboozled, so therefore, when you say religion-wise,
Spiritually wise. Because we already established that we don't limit ourselves to religion. You know, exactly. We was learning how to rise above religion and get into a space where we can get above the nonsense on that. So let me not say nonsense. Let me take that back. Where you can rise above where everybody's praying and get to where you can learn.
Spiritually, I'm learning. I'm learning to be more open. I'm learning to recognize I'm learning to recognize the signs. I'm learning to recognize what God is telling me, what my heart is saying, where I was so closed off before on what I thought I knew what was right and what was right for me, to the point now I'm more open to listening instead of following some rules of religion. Is that?
Yeah, I guess you can call that. But you can close out right in that camera right there. Because there's somebody that's watching this interview, or that's going to watch this interview, right? There's going to be some young dude that's going to see this or hear about it, about a dude that was on a level 3 yard and ended up, you know what I'm saying, representing the same thing that this brother's representing in the same fashion, in the same mode. Talk to that cat for about 1 minute. Let him know what you want him to know.
All I want you to know is to don't give up. And it may sound cliche, but that's the real. You're going to go through every emotion. You're going to go through, it's times now that I feel like I'm not good enough. And then I just shake those thoughts out of my head, because those are just the pressures of life that's on top of your head. But just know that you have a purpose. Know that you will rise. Look, I've been shot in both arms. I got 90% nerve damage in one arm. They told me I'd never be able to do a pull-up. I do push-ups. I fight in karate now. It's just so many things that you can overcome if you just put your mind to it. I know sign language. I know I went to college in prison. Wherever you are at, you can make the best of any situation wherever you're at. I don't care if you're in the hole somewhere. You got to learn to make the best of your situation, and then just know that something's better going to happen for you. You just got to know it. You just have to know it. Because when you doubt it, you know, that's when you get all the setbacks. And we all get setbacks, you know. I get setbacks. There's days I don't make nothing selling a T-shirt. But guess what I do? I'm finna go to the studio. You know, I save my money. I have a food truck right now in Atlanta, a hibachi truck called From Fins and Feathers. It's just so many things that, you know, that you have to open yourself to believe in, and it's going to take you places that you didn't think that you was going to go.
And that's how we're going to close off today's show, because all you got to do is have faith in yourself. And sometimes that's all it takes, because there will be days where you will be the only one who believes in you.
Not your girl.
Sometimes that's all it counts.
Yes, sir.
This has been Ty Lo, my boy Tiny Amp.
Oh, man. It's a pleasure.
Yes, sir.
Man.
And you have been hard in the paint.